This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 181. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
0208 816 7691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and the boss. Garraz, you've got to straighten your tie because the boss is here. Welcome, everyone.
Yeah, good to be here. Hi, Garraz.
Hello, fella. How are you?
Very well. Very well.
Good.
Yeah, so we're all sharply dressed, and all the paperwork looks good. The in tray is empty.
I don't like the way you've organised your paperclips there, David.
Yeah. But the in tray is only empty because the bin is full. That was my dad's filing system. He had a filing system where he put everything into the in tray at the start of the day, and then about lunchtime he'd put it all into the pending tray, and then at the end of the day he'd throw it all in the bin and he'd say, if it's important, they'll call me. So that was his
good,
that was
good time management, that.
That was his time management system. But we're here to talk about cricket. So we've got the World 2020 going on, and of course there's been a big comeback in the form of Harbhajan, who's made an impact against England and destroyed the English batting. So Garraz, what do you think about Harbhajan's comeback? We talked about it a little while back, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, and I'm pleased to see it, because I think he's good for the game. I'm pleased to see that he's gone back to basics and started to fly at the ball and do the things that made him such a big catch when he first came onto the scene. And I think probably 2020, in particular, the importance that he's put on the IPL and doing well for the Mumbai Indians has probably negated from his performance, because it's certainly been noted that he's got very flat and sort of tried to get the ball under the bat. And that really isn't his game so much. That isn't what gave him success in those early years where he came onto the scene and tricked people with his doozer and his off spinners and his flight and his guile, as opposed to just jamming it under the bat. And there's lots of players that can do that nowadays. And his point of difference is his skill. And it was great to see him reconnect with that, even though obviously it was against England.
It was an interesting match, wasn't it? Because I think you could write whole essays on that match about all the different elements of India performed and way England as a team performed, and then the way individuals within the game performed as well. There were so many dimensions to that match.
It was a cracker, and I think it was needed. I know it wasn't a tight game in the end, but it's been needed a little bit in the tournament, because with the rain that's been around and some pretty average performances from a couple of the sides as well. It was great to see some quality on show, and obviously most of that quality came from India in that game. But it also showed where England have got to get to if they're going to defend their title.
Think about Harbhajan too. He comes as a bit of a package. He's almost like the Phil Edmonds of Indian cricket. You know, he's a spin bowler, but he comes with a certain aggression, and he does like to stamp his authority over the batsman, doesn't he?
Yeah, he certainly does, and his issue, I think, in the last few years is that he's got an ego. He's got a significant ego, and that's fine. He's not alone in that. But he likes to be competitive. He likes to be in the face of the opposition. But obviously, you've got to back that up with skill, and I think he's put himself under a lot of pressure. And I know in the first edition of the ICC T20 World Cup, he actually did a great job by jamming the ball underneath the feet of the batters in that final against Pakistan in South Africa. And I think he got carried away by that, and his ego sort of took over, and that's negated from his performances recently. And it's great to see him reconnect. I'm sure that some interesting conversations between the likes of Fletch and himself have taken place, and I'm sure that people like Tendulkar, who he's got huge respect for and played quite a lot of cricket with now, have got involved with sort of revisiting what made him great in the first place. And I'm not saying he's a finished article. I'm not saying he's completely back, because he's only done it once. But it's good to see from a world game, and it will be interesting to see how he develops in this competition. Whether India go with him again, because obviously they've got Ashwin to bring back into the side, who's going to play a prominent dominant role. And also then what it means in terms of 50 over and test matches, especially with the England series coming up around the corner in test cricket.
It's interesting to see that he got back some of those ideas of flight and throwing the ball up and controlling the way that he did before after having a stint playing a little bit of county cricket. I wonder if the two there were linked together, whether that just gave him that little bit of confidence to be able to go back to the things which he knew he could do well.
Interesting.
I'm sure it did. And volume was something he needed, and he needed volume in... You know, playing without being disrespectful to Essex, playing in a form of cricket that all of the eyes of the world wasn't necessarily always going to be on, particularly the four-day championship, second division in the UK. And he could go back out there and throw the ball up and do all of the things that made him so great in the first place. And I'm sure that volume of doing that over a sustained period of time is paying dividends for him.
Spin is a massive confidence thing, isn't it? I mean, there'd probably be spinners listening to this, people who boss have no idea who Phil Edmonds is.
Sorry, everyone.
Who will be thinking to themselves, gosh, you know, I'm in a position where Harbhajan was. You know, I've got dropped from my team. I don't know what to do next. What's a practical thing we can come up with to say to somebody in that position?
Everybody's a bit individual, but I think spinners need patience. And as coaches and selectors and captains, we need to be patient with spinners. But in this case, I think it's a lot about personality. I think it's a lot about ego and reading your own press and believing your own press. And I'm just hoping for the World Game, because it is exciting to see Harbhajan back. He's got a good character about him. People want to watch him play cricket. He's grown up a little bit and started listening to some really good people that are around him. As I say, it's only one game in, and it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. But you know, Harbhajan in world cricket is a good place. It's a bit like, you know, the Kevin Peterson situation. World cricket's better off if he's playing in it. And you know, if people have to find their own way and have some discussions and some robust discussions with people to get them back to doing the things that have given them the best chance of success, and the world of cricket is only going to benefit.
Yeah, a while back I wrote an article called Bowl with Personality as Well as the Ball. That was a bit more about Graham Swan, who also puts a lot of his personality into his bowling. But I think it really applies as a spinner. You've got to have that that strong personality too, and you've got to be able to bowl with that personality as well as just sort of running up and popping it on a length. It's not just about just bowling. It's about the confidence of playing within your own personality and bringing that out in the way that you bowl, I think.
I think that's a really valid point, actually. And, you know, you look at the best guys. Warne definitely did that. Muralitharan definitely does that. Or did that. Swanee, very much the same. And we can't ask people to be what they're not, because ultimately they're going to fall down at some stage when you do. So I think that's a really valid point.
Yeah, I mean, Warne was incredible at it, wasn't he? You know, he would he'd bowl a leg break which didn't turn, and, you know, at the end of the match it was a slider.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of his big things, and I've probably said it before, so I'm sorry if I'm boring people, but I always said to him that you could walk into a game of cricket and not look at the scoreboard, but think that the team that he's bowling for were massively on top at any stage. So even if a scoreboard reads 400 for two and he's bowling away, the theatre that he created around what he was doing made you feel that, you know, a few wickets or a turnaround in the game was only a couple of balls away. And it was one of his big assets, I think, as a cricketer.
Are you a Warnie appreciator, boss?
Oh yeah, very much so. How can you not be, really? But it's that like Tiger Woods type messiah scenario, isn't it? That the persona is bigger than the performance, and that just psychs out the opposition.
All right, well let's head into the yes no round to finish off this little introduction, and then we can get into the meat of the questions. And so this section is all about just answering yes or no to three questions. That's all we can do. We can't go into any more detail, even though sometimes we want to. I know I do, and I'm sure Gareth is the same. And of course, what we've been doing in the last couple of weeks is also been asking you, the listeners, to chip in with your thoughts on these questions as well. And if you head over to pitchvision.com/academy, you can see there is the poll for the following week's show. So you can chip in and we will read out what the community thinks about these three questions as well. So, boss, in the absence of Berners, who is digging a tunnel to Australia or something, you've got the questions this week. Fire away.
Rightio. Okay. Yes or no? Gale is the greatest ever T20 batsman.
Yes.
And the community, 75% of the community also said yes. Number two, Malinga is the greatest ever T20 bowler.
Yes.
Yes.
The community was split 50-50% on that one. And last one, T20 is the easiest form of cricket to captain.
Yes.
No.
75% of the community said no.
Time now for us to open the mailbag and answer a couple of questions which are sent in by the listeners to the show, who are all coaches or players and wanting to improve their game or improve the game of others. And of course, the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com, so you can get your coaching videos and ebooks, worksheets, interactive guides all over there at pitchvision.com. So, boss, you've got the questions this week. What's the first one in the mailbag?
Yeah. The first question this week is from Bonga Chipkonga. He asks us, I'm an off spinner who bowls a carom ball. Where should I pitch the off break and where should I pitch the carom ball?
Oh, that's quite an achievement to be able to bowl a carom ball, because it's not easy being able to flick the ball out the front of your hand so it turns the other way. It's the equivalent of the googly for the off spin bowler, really, and it's a tricky one to play and it's a tricky one to bowl. So congratulations, Bonga, on being able to do that. I would say that the important thing for me in if you can bowl any kind of variation is not to give it away too much by bowling it in a massively different place than you would your traditional off break. If you are bowling, say, around the wicket and you're pitching the ball on off stump to try and hit off stump, turning the ball back into a right-handed batsman, for example, then, and it's a length where the batsman is playing forward, which you should be trying to get the batsman to play forward if you're a spinner most of the time, then, pitch it in roughly the same place again, and so the ball can just catch the edge. And you've got your keeper or perhaps a slip there who can snaffle it up.
Yeah, you make a good point. You don't want to give the game away by the line of your flights. And, I think Murali sort of taught us that, really. And certainly in discussion with a number of Sri Lankan players who came over as overseas players in county cricket, one of the ways that they played him in the nets was to pick his trajectory line to start off with. But then he became savvy to that and started to bowl the ball very much in the same places and tinkering with it here and there. So you couldn't line up his trajectory. So the best bowler of a sort of carom ball type thing is Mendis presently in world cricket. He plays for Sri Lanka. And so he bowls predominantly over the wicket at right-handed batters, pitching his off spinner just outside off stump. And he's got two options. He can either go slightly straighter with his carom ball, which brings in LBWs, which is one of his major dismissal types. So it sort of skids on from off stump just outside, and instead of spinning towards leg stump, it actually goes on straight, and he gets people playing down the wrong line. And then obviously, as you say, is pitching it exactly in the same place as his off spinner, and people tend to run past it and getting stumped, or tend to spew the ball off at the big sort of outside half of the bat and get caught in the deep, or get caught in that slip and keeper area. So I think it would be too simple, as you say, if people just bowled the carom ball pitching middle and off and the off spinner ball pitching outside off, because that would give the game away massively. And the key for me is length, and we've talked about it so significantly on this show, is length is absolutely massive. And if you can keep bowling length, then you're going to build pressure. If you ally that with variations in spin type like you've got there, then you're going to make yourself a very appetizing bowler for any captain or coach to have in their team.
It's interesting about the carom ball as well, because I've not seen anyone close up who can bowl it. So I don't know if you have, Gareth, but I imagine it comes out a little bit flatter. It doesn't have as much loop or dip to it as a traditional off break would have.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, the Karen ball is different from a doozer. A doozer, when it's bowled really well, has got quite considerable revs on it. The Karen ball doesn't necessarily have massive revs on it. So it ultimately, if you think about Mendes's Karen ball, it almost looks like a, when it's flicked out, like an away swinger, a sort of drifty away swinger, as opposed to anything else. So it's not going to rag square like a doozer can do when it's delivered by the biggest spinners of a ball, because the doozer generally has more revs on it, whereas a Karen ball, because you're basically imparting the action on the ball with that middle finger flicking it and flicking it out. Obviously, the middle finger is not going to impart as much spin as the whole hand and the whole wrist when somebody bowls a doozer. So, you know, you've got to take that into consideration. And the less revs you've got on the ball, obviously, the less the ball's going to dip. So it's generally going to keep going. Sort of, I don't know, I think the way of looking at it in a really basic way is to think about your club cricket second 11 and your seamer that's been around, your swing bowler that's been around for 40 years that has gradually got slower in pace and just gets it to drift away from the right. From a right-hander, and that's sort of much the Karen ball profile of flight and movement.
For anyone who's not familiar out there of how you bowl a Karen ball, Gareth, how do you grip the ball for a Karen ball?
You grip it. I mean, the one that I've seen obviously is Mendes, and he's the one that I've analysed more than anybody, I suppose, because he's been the major exponent of it to date. And it's great to hear that there are players that are up and coming and playing in club cricket there. That are trying to get that going in their cricket as well. But he's been the main exponent. And you hold it very much with your fingers like an off spinner. But the difference being is that your middle finger is actually behind the ball rather than on top of the seam. So it's all coiled up. If you can think about that middle finger being coiled up, as if you've got, if you put your thumb on the bottom of your middle finger and you make it into a bunch, whereas the other ones stay out. And it's that flicking motion against the ball, as if you're a bit like Sabutio football, I suppose. You know, as you flick the little player in Sabutio football, and the ball comes out in that fashion.
It was. It's not that new, actually. It was invented in the 40s, I think. It was. There was an Australian guy called Jack Iverson, I think his name was.
Yeah, that's right.
He used to bowl everything out of the front of the hand, and he can make it go in both directions.
Yeah.
So it's got a new name. It's been around a long time, but it's never really become mainstream for some reason or another.
And I don't think it's mainstream now, because I mean, you know, the two guys that we're talking about is a fella from 40 years ago and somebody who's developed this from playing Karam, which is a board game in Sri Lanka, and that's where he got the finger strength, I suppose, to be able to do that. So I'm not expecting to see hundreds of Karam spin bowlers coming out as a result of this podcast or any other thing, but it's just an interesting little variation on a theme of getting the ball to spin and ultimately deception, isn't it? Which is fantastic.
All right, Bonga, I hope that has answered your question. Shall I shoot on to the next question, Dave?
Fire away, we're ready.
Okay, Russell out of the mailbag. This question comes from Vijay. He asks, we recently had a fielding session in which we practiced diving, but as soon as we started, I got badly bruised when I dived because I didn't know how to make a proper dive. What's the correct technique for diving and cushioning the impact, and how can we practice that in our sessions? Any drills for that?
It's a brilliant question, actually, and one that you see so many people struggling with because they don't have the understanding of the dive. There's two types of dive, effectively. So you watch a wicketkeeper generally dive, and the nicks and the catches that they get go very much sort of low right and low left, just outside the line of towards their ankles, really. And the dive you have for that one is to really throw the head into the catch. And you'll see most wicketkeepers will roll rather than dive at the end. So they won't be flat, they'll roll out of it. And I think that's a really important ball to be able to catch or stop, even in the outfield as well, because you know, you've got two types of ball. You've got the one that's drilled either side of you, and you need to be able to stop that. And how many people do we see bowlers with hands on their hips because it's gone past or underneath us? So I think that's a really important one. And I always coach people to be wicketkeepers and get their head into the catch, because often, and we're going to talk about it, I think, in our last section about the London Bridge, we'll refer to that. And if you get your head into the dive, then you're not going to have a London Bridge. So there's a reference that's going to come up a bit later. Then there's the full length dive. And this is what I think is being referred to in this question. So from a purely biomechanical term in point, we call the absorption of impact, which is what we're talking about here. There's an acronym called TRAM. And basically, if you increase the amount of time that your body spends on the floor, then you absorb impact. If you increase your range, i.e. stretch yourself out, then you spread that impact across your body rather than isolating it. It sounds like it's happened in this case on your elbows or your knees where you pick up those bruises. If you increase your area by stretching out your range, then you absorb impact. And if you spread the impact across your mass, then you absorb the impact as well. So if you think about a Jonty Rhodes dive that we saw back in the 1990s and 2000s, he would sort of uncoil himself. And when he'd land, he would catch the ball or stop the ball and then extend his arms. And that's increasing the time, the range, the area and the mass, which therefore means that the impact is spread across the body. What most people do when they take a catch and a diving catch is they pull the ball in. And when you pull the ball into the body, you're reducing your range, you're reducing the area, and therefore you're increasing the impact on the ground. And when you get those impacts, not only do you get bruises, but also you're likely to drop the ball as you land. And we do see that in club cricket quite a lot. So as you take a catch, particularly on those full length divers, then encourage yourself to stretch out rather than pull the ball in, because you'll be increasing your range and you won't hurt yourself so much. Okay, so that's the biomechanics, that's the science behind it. But I think it's quite an easy one to envisage within your head.
In terms of drills, I saw Mark Eileen, who is the head coach at the Lord's Indoor School, do a great drill indoors where he put out a gymnastics mat for the obvious reasons as a cushion. He also dusted that mat with talcum powder.
Yep.
And then had groups of boys practicing those dives in a way that they wouldn't damage themselves but could learn to adjust the dive, you know, without having ruined their knees or their elbows in the process.
Yeah.
To get to comfortable. And it was a really good looking drill. It was as simple as the fact of that you put the gymnastics mat in the right place. They all ran towards it, he hit the ball and they dived onto it, and just through repetition learnt the way to adjust the dive in the process and take the ball cleanly.
It's a great drill. So talcum powder takes the friction away, so you slide across the surface. You can do the same thing outside. If you've got an area of your cricket ground that isn't, you know, the square or a high traffic area, then you can sprinkle that with water, and then you do exactly the same principle. So people can dive onto the grass, and because they're not getting caught up with friction on the grass, they actually slide through the slippery surface on the top, and that's a good way to practice as well. But you know, the way to practice a dive to start off with is to take all of those things out of the equation and to engage your head into the dive, because most people lead their dives with their hand. So their hand goes towards the ball, and that's when we get very high, and that's where because we get very high with our dives, we end up landing from quite a big height. So I always get people starting on their knees, and I feed balls across them, and I encourage them to get their hands, so from quite close range, from 5 or 6 yards, I'd feed balls across them, and I encourage them to get their head leading towards a catch. And as a result, they can start to understand that if a head is there, you're in control, and then you can stretch out as you land on the floor, and then you build it up to getting them off of their knees into their standing up position. You can then introduce the talcum powder on the mat, which is the indoor one, or the sprinkling of the grass outside, which is the outdoor one.
Sorry, Dave.
The other thing to mention is the application of common sense in when it comes to practicing diving. If you are, say you're a coach and you've got some kids, and it's, you know, a boiling hot day, and the ground is extremely dry, and you haven't had much rain, then you know, it's probably not the time, and they're not that great at diving. It's probably not the time to start practicing it. So although there is a place for and the time for practicing diving, you've got to apply a little bit of common sense to these things as well, and think to yourself, well, okay, they might not be they might have missed a couple of dives in their last game, but probably we're not going to practice it this week.
Well, it's a great one to practice when it's peeing it down with rain. You know, we all sit in the changing room, don't we? We all sit in the pavilion when it's raining and say we can't practice. Well, here's a fantastic opportunity to practice something specific.
Agreed.
When it's peeing it down with rain, you know, and we shouldn't get put off by that. We should be motivated to get out there and get some old tatty clothes on and get out there and get muddy. And that's what wicketkeepers generally do. You won't see too many wicketkeepers sitting inside when it's raining. They'll get outside and take the opportunity to practice these things. So yeah, get out there when it's raining. And if you live in the UK like the three of us do, there's plenty of opportunity to do it.
One thing I know is a older player who has lost a little bit of flexibility. I used to love diving in cricket in my younger days, and I was quite good at it. But as I got older and I lost a bit of flexibility, I found that when I went for dives, all I would be doing is actually just collapsing my knees to get low quickly, and as a result, all of my weight would come down on my knees. Because I wasn't flexible enough to move my whole body. Like you said, I wasn't flexible enough to lead with my head. And as a result, when I was practicing diving and things, I actually smashed my knees up quite a lot from doing it and started to avoid it, diving altogether. And I think if I'd done the drill that you were talking about, Gareth, where I started on my knees and forced my torso and my head to dive, I probably would have got out of that habit of just collapsing my knee down to get low. Instead,
yeah, absolutely, and it's a reverse chaining type drill. That so you start off with small movements that you control, and as the competency and the confidence increases, then you increase the range of movement by getting people to stand up on their feet and what have you. And it's important. And what you're talking about there is confidence, isn't it? It's confidence that my flexibility is down a bit, so I haven't got the confidence to throw myself around. Well, if we reverse chain, then we can demonstrate that actually through good technique and good practice in a very controlled fashion, we can increase that confidence. And an example of that would have been Andy Caddick, who I had towards the end of his career at Somerset, became a fantastic guy on the 45 offside and 45 sweep, anticipating the ball being swept, and then also having the capability, even at the age of 37, 38 as he was, and being incredibly tall, to be able to get his head into the dive or the catch and pull off some really, some match-winning stops and catches, which was fantastic. But that all came about from getting him onto his knees, working in that reverse chaining capacity. And as you say, it works for guys that are getting on in years but still want to have an impact in the field.
It's time now on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show for somebody to climb up onto the soapbox, and it's a special guest this week. So before he clambers up there to have his minute to talk about anything he likes to do with cricket playing or coaching, let's just give him a quick introduction. It's Nickel. He's back on the show. Welcome, Nickel.
Hey, it's great to be back.
So as you know, Nickel, you get 60 seconds and you can rant or rage or just give us a little life lesson in that 60 second window, but you can't talk for any longer than that. And we will cut you off. So, Nickel, over to you for this week's soapbox.
Okay, so I was playing a game. In that game, I went for an off drive. What happened with me was there was a fast bowler. I was on my 52. Now, it went far too away from my bat. It wasn't an edge, but the umpire gave it out. So I was really frustrated. I had a chat with the umpire, like, come on, it is not out, it should not be like that. He said, no, I've seen it, it is out. And I was really frustrated. I knew it wasn't an edge. But at the end, I think I've got a positive lesson, which I think you should all get. So it was like, umpires can also make mistakes. It's not, they are also humans. It's not like they are just perfect, they won't make any mistakes. So from I would like to tell you, better to not get frustrated or anything like that. Just say umpire, it is just a part of the game. Come on, you have to go like it. So make it feel like a positive.
Okay, so we've run out of time on the show. We have got a few things that we need to sort out before we finish. And the first of those, of course, is the competition winner. Every week we give away a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. bowlingnews.com for the best question of the week. Our two questions from Bonga about bowling a carrom ball and Vijay about diving. Garaz, which one did you prefer?
Well, in terms of questions, I thought Vijay's question was spot on. In terms of the names, I think Bonga's name is magnificent. And as a result of that, I was going to give it to Bonga, but actually I've had a change of heart because it was a good discussion that came out of the diving question. So this week is Vijay, and I encourage Bonga to get another question in, because if he does, there's a good chance you're going to win, mate.
Well done. Well done, both. Well done, both.
Yeah, well, don't be discouraged, Bonga, and keep bowling those carrom balls, and keep us posted on what's happening. And congratulations to you, Vijay. Hopefully we can cut down on the bruises that you're getting. And you've got a nice online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy waiting for you as well. If somebody wanted to get in touch with the show, Garaz, and put their own question in to win a prize and get their question answered, how would they do that?
Well, by email, you'd go to coach@pitchvision.com. By telephone, 0208 816 7691.
You can tweet us on the Twitter. We're at PV Cricket Coach. And you can Facebook us on the Facebook. You do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, you'll find us hanging around there. If you want to subscribe to the show, and I strongly suggest you do because it comes out every week and it's just as good as this one every week, then you can head over to iTunes and you can do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. And if you don't want to use iTunes but you still want to subscribe to the show, you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and you can subscribe there. And also, a new feature, you can listen in the sidebar on Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com/academy. So while you're browsing the articles there, you can also listen to our dulcet tones. And the other extra feature that we've got is also in the sidebar. We have your chance to join in the community and have your say and answer the yes-no feature that we have every week. So if you've got your strong opinions, then click on yes or no for each one of the questions and it will go into our poll, and you'll be contributing to the community. One more thing that we need to talk about is this week's tailender, and we had a couple of submissions on our Facebook page, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, from Simon Jones. Not that one, the other one. He's a long time contributor to us, and we got two, which Gareth referred to previously, London Bridge. These are both quite London-centric, but I'm sure they can be adapted to anywhere in the world where there's a bridge and some kind of train line, which is most places. London Bridge, when a fielder dives over the top of one, going down in instalments, resembling the lowering of a bridge. And Central Line, which is in reference to a London Underground line, shouted when a batsman plays and misses down the wrong line. Repeat, using a different London Underground line, if he does it again.
Is there one for when you look like a collapsing bridge? Because that's what I look like.
Yes, I don't know. Yeah, maybe we need to look into that one. Yeah, and there's a wobbly bridge in London, isn't there, as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you look wobbly as well, or do you just completely collapse?
No, I look like a complete failure of the structure.
Ah, and all those hopes as a young man. That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Garaz. Cheers, boss.
Bye.
Cheers, lads.
What's a practical thing we can come up with to say to somebody in that position?
Are you looking for me to answer that?
Oh, sorry, Garaz. I thought you were
sorry,
talking.
I thought you said boss. So I was waiting for the boss to come out with some pearls then.
Oh, no, yeah.
I have no idea.